Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today, I have contemporary author Olivia Dade with me. Her tagline is Sex, Banter, Nerdery, and Love. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome. So first, I just wanted to kind of get like an introduction to like you and how you got into reading romance. Like, what was the first book that you remember reading?
I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
And that's because my mother read romances, mm-hmm. and she had a pile of books in her closet, mm-hmm. hidden to the side, which I was told not to peruse. Mm-hmm. So naturally, whenever my parents left the house,
right.
the first thing I did was flip through them. And
sure.
there were a lot of pirates, a lot of kidnapped virgins.
Uh-huh.
And she had a few contemporaries, but she must have had a pirate thing at that point. And I flipped through them. I mean, so from the time probably I was 6 or 7,
okay,
I was reading them. Now, did I understand a lot of what was happening?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, as I say in my little bio, there was a lot of throbbing.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the source of that throbbing was.
Right.
What a manhood was very unclear to me,
uh-huh.
at that time. You know, there was a lot of purple prose at that
sure.
time. You know, the sex scenes, while in some of them are quite filthy, but they tended to use a lot of euphemisms. So
mm-hmm.
there were a lot of fireworks, a lot of waves crashing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was many years before I realized in some cases what was happening. But I mean, I loved them from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at children's books, I'm sure it's still, but even back then, there were a lot of series that were basically romances with training wheels.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Sunfire series, which were historical romances.
Okay.
If you go back, they were actually wonderful. They had a lot of great historical detail, but it was always this young woman, it was YA, in retrospect,
mm-hmm.
always torn between two dudes. You know, at Jamestown or, you know, in San Francisco, the San Francisco Fire or wherever. Unfortunately, she always had to choose one. If it were a modern day adult romance, she could have both.
Right.
And it would have been much more exciting at the end. At the time, she actually had to choose one. It
uh-huh.
was usually pretty clear. But those were historical romances. They had little contemporary ones. I guess it was like the Sweet Dreams series or something. But so I read everything, but I always loved romances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that seems to be kind of a general theme against like all the readers that I've met and other authors. Like, we all kind of started this like very, very young in some fashion of, you know, finding romance and the stories of love. And, you know, although I was like reading Babysitter's Club for a very long time. But and I never really got into like Sweet Valley High, which was kind of like the early kind of, I don't remember much about that. But so what would you say that you like the most about like romances and the genre? And
I've sort of looked back and tried to figure out what resonated with me,
mm-hmm.
very early and very deeply, clearly, because I've always, since, you know, before, again, I can remember, romances have always been my primary
mm-hmm.
genre, not my entire reading, but my parents did not have a great marriage.
Okay.
And I think that a part of me was very comforted and very drawn to the idea that there was a guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
HEA, you know, happy ever,
right.
happily ever after, that problems could be worked out. And yeah, I think that I found that very appealing. They're also very immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who sort of liked to disappear into my own head a lot,
mm-hmm.
That was very appealing to me, too. Other books, which I love to read, but they were not as immersive to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was more aware of my surroundings. And there are times when I was younger, and actually there are still times now, where I would prefer just to sort of shut off whatever else is happening
mm-hmm.
and let myself be part of the story so that the worried, anxious part of my brain can sort of
mm-hmm.
can shut off for a little while.
Well, yeah.
And romances do that for me in a way that other genres do not.
I agree. I get that completely because I'm one that when I'm reading, I have to be like, I kind of have to see myself in it and kind of like immerse myself in it. And I'm like in the story, if you will. And so some other books, you know, like some other genres, it's just not as easy. And, you know, as somebody who does have a hard time letting go of some of the other things, it's nice to be like, okay, so for the next hour or two, I'm just going to read this book and I don't get to hear all the other stuff in my head that's like running through, like so it is. I get that a lot. So,
and I always most loved, I mean, some readers, and this is legit and it's great that they do, love sort of with alpha holes and
right.
and sort of, and I was never drawn to that, in part because I had a real life, like, I'm not sure alpha, but like the whole part actually worked. Right. So that was never appealing to me because mm-hmm. I had experienced at least the negative aspects of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was nice for me is in the stories that I was reading, there was also a lot of respect
mm-hmm.
between the hero and the heroine. Even in the 80s, you could find it. I mean, there mm-hmm. there were instances, obviously, where that was not the case. But, yeah, respect and the hero caring for the heroine, that is always, to this day, is a huge draw for me. Mm-hmm. That's my catnip, mm-hmm. is caring, like physically caring, emotionally caring
mm-hmm.
for the heroine is catnip for me all the way.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think I'm drawn to your books and books that have like a similar kind of feel. Because, you know, I started reading romance like 8 years ago, give or take, like hardcore, and, you know, read all sorts of things. And there's many books out there with the alpha holes. And sometimes, you know, they do a good job there where the alpha hole is like alpha-y and holy, but really does care too. But then sometimes there's just these books where they're just like straight horrible people, and it's like those things. You know, I actually was having a private Twitter conversation with somebody just this week about a book that I read that epitomizes everything that I think I don't like about romance.
I saw this conversation, I yes. think. Not so private.
Right. Well, yeah. But we also went, I went offline with somebody else and really got on uh-huh. my soapbox about it. But, like, to me, that's not, to me, and the books that I enjoy, and I don't mean to, like, shame other people for what they enjoy, but that's just not what I want my romance books to be about. I want them to be about people that care about each other. They can be flawed, because I love a flawed heroine or hero, but I need them to, the flaws to come from a place of like
basic human decency.
Yes. And not obsession and possessive, because that's not healthy. And I get that they're books and they're fantasy, but also at some point I don't,
it's just not your catnip.
It's not my catnip at all, you know. And it gets this whole like, what really do I want from my books? And I'm like, sometimes I just want to be able to read a book and
right.
enjoy it and think about like, this isn't healthy, this isn't right, like but I just can't let that go. So but kudos.
Caretaker alphas I can mm-hmm. handle.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny because I posted, there's this thing on Twitter called One Line Wednesday.
Okay.
Where there's a theme for every week, and you post basically one line, mm-hmm. the length of a tweet mm-hmm. about your current work in progress. And I posted a line from basically my villain
okay.
of my work in progress. And I had several people be like, ooh, he sounds hot. Because the assumption was that like, he'd said something I considered villainous and douchey,
mm-hmm.
but they were like, ooh, hot. And I'm like, this is the, I can't, I don't think I can write alphas.
Mm-hmm.
I may try at some point just as a sort of exercise, because mm-hmm. I like challenging myself and stretching myself. But I think that's the fundamental disconnect, is behavior that other people consider like alluring hero behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I consider like doucheville population you hero.
Right.
So, yeah. So I was like, no, he was the villain.
Yeah.
That's why he said that.
That's so funny. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's very interesting because like as I've really gotten into this reading and just, you know, meeting more people and finding more books and stuff like that, like I really enjoy a good beta hero. You know, like I think the beta hero is not seen enough in romance, and or even, you know, a beta light. And so like once I really understood that that's why I like, sometimes it's very hard for me sometimes to read some of these alpha holes. I mean, there's a few authors that I'm like, I know what I'm going to get. I don't know why I do this to myself, but I do it. But it's really hard sometimes as a reader to find those and be like, you know, I want to read about like smart women that aren't waiting for a man to save them, but just happen to fall in love with somebody, you know. And it's so I really, really enjoy when I find authors that are doing that. So thank you.
You know, even my most alpha-y heroes mm-hmm. are probably secret betas. I just don't, like I said, maybe that's something that I'll try to work with just as a challenge at some point. But mm-hmm. I mean, I think that my fundamental mindset, just in what I appeals to me in my life, it's hard for me. Mm-hmm. And it may be easier for women who may have grown up with more gentle or serve mm-hmm. Caring, loving male figures in their sure. life to be able to imagine an alternative in which it would be alluring and sexy to mm-hmm. have a gruff, uncommunicative, like right. occasionally like mean for no reason
right.
sort of dude in their life. And mm-hmm. for me, I'm like, I had that for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I don't need that.
You don't need that. Yeah.
So yeah, that's, but it's true. There are some authors that I will read. Mm-hmm. You know, there are authors who write so propulsively that even though that's not my particular catnip, it's just you can't put it down anyway. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it. So how did you decide that you wanted to, like, transition from reading romance to being an author of romance?
It was not a conscious decision. Mm-hmm. In 2014, that's actually when I started, so not all that long ago.
Oh, wow, okay.
I had only really ever written, I come from an academic background. Okay. I have my master's degree in U.S. history. I was in a doctoral program. I left a little bit after the master's. So while I had a lot of experience with writing, it was basically all nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I had always assumed that I didn't have any talent for fiction writing.
Okay.
So in 2014, I was depressed. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was just beginning to realize that that was the name for sort of what I was feeling.
Okay.
Which sounds idiotic in a culture where people talk about depression, but I'm very good at not paying attention to things that I don't want to pay attention to.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Which is part of why I, you know, was reading a ton. I was obsessively reading romances mm-hmm. in part just so I wouldn't have to think. I started going to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along that time, I just sat down and I started writing a scene. And it didn't feel... And I don't even know why. It didn't feel right, so I set that aside. But then it suddenly occurred to me, you know, I could set a romance. And I used to work at Colonial Williamsburg in costume.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I could set a romance there.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And I just started writing. And this time, this book, which I did finish, which no one will ever see, other than my poor critique partner who got halfway through when we realized it wasn't going anywhere and we just... Mm-hmm. said forget it, is a full 90,000 words, which is a right. good, a full length book of like sex and banter. And at some point I realized, I went to my first RWA, Romance Writers of America conference, and they talked about this thing called plot, I'd heard about before, but
right.
I hadn't necessarily incorporated into my manuscript. And it turns out that if you have 90,000 words, at some point there should actually be some conflict or plot. Mm-hmm. The sex and banter alone will not fill up. Mm-hmm. Well, it can fill up that
right.
space. And I actually, there are parts of that book I still really love that I will try to strip mine for future books, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's hard because the humor and the banter is always very character specific. And mm-hmm. if it's not those same characters, it...
Right.
Anyway, so I wrote that. And mm-hmm. then somewhere along the lines, I was like, I really... enjoy this. And I felt more like myself than I had felt in years.
Okay.
When we adopted a child,
mm-hmm.
I basically stopped reading for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was always a nerd and an academic and someone who very much defined myself by my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't using it anymore.
Not in the same way, probably. Right.
I was,
yeah.
But not that.
Right.
Not that aspect of my brain.
Right.
I learned
I
all sorts of new things.
Yeah.
Caretaking for a child. I taught myself to cook. These are all things that I did that I I value and consider accomplishments, mm-hmm. but my vocabulary was diminishing. And I mean that very mm-hmm. literally. Like, I could feel that, I could feel myself getting less mm-hmm. literate in right. a way. And it was such a relief to suddenly start writing and feel like there was a whole section of my brain that I had neglected mm-hmm. for years that I suddenly sort of lit up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at that point, I just decided I would go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I wrote another book, this time with an actual plot.
I mean, you know.
I mean, it was picky, but I figured I would go ahead and do it.
If you're going to do it, yeah.
And then, for, you know, for better or worse, that second book is Broken Resolutions, the first book in the series that it sold.
That's awesome.
You know, and I got a contract mm-hmm. And I've been writing professionally since.
That's great. That's awesome. Like, I have so much admiration for all the authors that are just, you know, even the ones that are doing it part-time, sometimes, you know, very casually, full-time. It's great, especially because I love reading all the books. So
there are women. I'm fortunate to be able to do it full-time, in part because my husband chose a career path that was much smarter. I have I'm MA in American history. Mm-hmm. Well, other than teaching, which I've done and loved,
mm-hmm.
Museum work, which I've done and loved, and I was a librarian, and that's what I was doing when I first started writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there aren't a ton of places to go with right. that. He's an engineer. He chose a better
right.
compensated you know, profession.
Uh-huh.
And I, every day, I know that that is a blessing, that that's even an opportunity for mm-hmm. me. You know, that we can, you know, scrimp a little bit and mm-hmm. try to save some, and that allows me to do something I really love. And there are women who are working full-time jobs with kids who are still busting out excellent manuscripts
mm-hmm.
in whatever free minutes they can. And
right.
I can't even imagine the sort of dedication and how tired they are, and it's amazing to me. There are so many incredible women and mm-hmm. men, but in romance it's
mostly
almost
women,
all women
yeah.
you know, who women, yeah. who are doing this. It's amazing
right.
to me.
It's amazing to me from the reader perspective, and you know, seeing the same thing. Like, I see these women that are putting out books however often and balancing family and work and, you know, all these things. So it's great. So tell me a little bit about this series that you have. So
it's called the Love Struck Librarian
right, okay.
series. I am a little bit lazy.
Oh,
so
stop.
I wanted to write what I uh-huh. knew, particularly in, to be honest, I have enough issues with anxiety that I was concerned that if I tried to write something that was too far beyond what I knew or my wheelhouse, it would stop me from writing entirely.
Okay.
In fact, I considered doing historical romances because I love those too.
Mm-hmm.
It's my background. I'm a historian by training. But I was concerned that I would become so paralyzed by mm-hmm. Concerns about authenticity and factual, that basically I would spend all my time researching and worrying rather than writing. So mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'm going to do contemporary. I'm going to do from my experience.
Mm-hmm.
While making it fictional, so if sure. they can get away with things you cannot actually get away with in a real library,
uh-huh.
But that it would take away that barrier for me to write,
mm-hmm.
you know, that mental sort of barrier. Originally, it was not a series.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it was a challenge to myself to write something with a plot.
Okay.
So Broken Resolutions was a novella because I'd gone to a talk at RWA in San Antonio by Julia Quinn, Eloisa James, and Connie Brockway about using novellas. If you're
mm-hmm.
someone who has plot issues, it can be a way to sort of, it makes it shorter, it makes it a little easier. It's,
mm-hmm.
and I wrote it, and the heroine is Penny.
Right.
And I gave her a boss, and at first the boss was just sort of a generic boss.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I wrote her, she ended up having a very, Angie.
Right.
Ended up having a very big personality, just
mm-hmm.
very body,
mm-hmm.
you know, just cheerful and body and just, you know, over the top, I think, awesome.
Right.
You know, personality. And but that was sort of inadvertent at the time. And then when I got a contract for originally for 4 books, it ended up being extended to 6. Then I was said, well, clearly she would be mm-hmm. the second person. And then from there, from the second book, I expanded out to the full group of the 6 women.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, after I added Angie, it was slowly becoming clearer to me. And this is something that happens as you write, sort of your central thing. Most writers I've heard, and I think that this is true, have certain central themes they tend to sort of circle around
mm-hmm.
in different stories and in different ways, but and not always. But one of the things that's very appealing to me and important to me is circles of female friends.
Sure.
I think when I first started writing, it was because I felt very isolated
mm-hmm.
and it was what I wanted. And mm-hmm. I wrote it into the book
mm-hmm.
as a way of sort of, you know, in some ways, wish fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the blessing and the wonderful irony is that through writing these books, which include these close female friendships, I have become part of sort of the romance community,
mm-hmm.
which has given me those female friendships. It is the biggest blessing
mm-hmm.
of my adult life, other than, you know, my family.
Right.
Is that, you know, I sort of... fiction became real life
mm-hmm.
that now I do have this circle of people. So that's anyway, they all find love. The first few books in the series were based on holidays.
Okay.
Because I was answering a submission call from another publisher looking for New Year's Eve stories.
Okay.
And they had to fall in love that night, which okay. if you're wondering why my first book happens very rapidly.
Yeah. Makes
that,
sense now.
That, okay. that is why. Mm-hmm. And so they said, well, if we're going to do this contract, why don't you do other holidays?
Mm-hmm.
So for my second one, My Reckless Valentine, which is Angie's story, her boss's, I did Valentine's Day. The third one, I did May Day.
Right.
Which, you know, is, I mean, it's not a whole book themed around May Day, although the idea of spring and renewal and
right.
all those things. And there's a May Day celebration that they're planning. And then the fourth book they serve by that point, we're like, yeah, do a summer theme. Book.
Whatever. So, yeah.
And originally that book that actually was written at the same time as Broken Resolutions.
Okay.
I had to originally it was set in the middle of winter. So I made that summer. then we did that. And then the next two, they're like, yeah, don't bother just with the seasons. Just write what you want to write. Although I had ideas for like a Halloween book and so forth. But yeah.
Costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to have a hero who was secretly terrified of like haunted houses and that
they that would be awesome.
And that there was a contest in the community of who could have like the most frightening haunted house. And he was going to have to judge and basically would spend a good chunk of this like trying to pretend that he's not freaked out in front of the heroine. Anyway. So, yeah, that's the series. So I've been able to write a book for all 6 of this circle of friends.
Mm-hmm.
So. Coming up in June is the sixth book comes out.
Okay.
I wrote an epilogue. Originally, I wrote it as part of the 6th book, but my editor was concerned that it distracted from the happily ever after for Mary, the 6th heroine.
Okay.
So he had me excise it from the book. But I actually was just talking to my publisher today, and we're going to use it as sort of a pre-order bonus for my 6th book.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the epilogue, you know, if you pre-order the 6th book, you would exclusively get the epilogue. The day before the book comes out.
Oh, that's great.
I wouldn't read it before the book.
Oh, man. But still, you have it.
But you have it. And
yes.
It's, you know, it's the length of a long chapter, and it really wraps up all their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be blunt, like, to circle back around to what I was talking earlier, it talks about the heroes and mm-hmm. their relationships with the heroines. But that epilogue is really about the 6 women.
Mm-hmm.
And about, you know, they're talking about their life, you know, now with their happily ever afters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a lot about their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, and I cried while writing it, because for me, that was so meaningful to me and
mm-hmm.
so important to me as I was writing it. So I hope if and when the people listening to this do read the epilogue,
uh-huh.
that they love it, because I really do love it.
Mm-hmm. I love a good epilogue. Mm-hmm. I love them. Like, you know, especially if it's like a series and it kind of features all the people, you know, it feels like these people that you've just spent all this time with, you know, who you've invested in their relationships, because that's how we are as readers. And then you get to see them kind of like finish the process. It's fantastic. So anyway, so you have a book 5, Driven to Distraction, is getting ready to come out.
It comes out on the 17th. January 17th.
Fantastic. And you brought a little excerpt with me.
I did.
With you that you're going to read for us today.
I will.
All right. That's fantastic. So if you will do that, and then I have a question for you.
All right. Well, let me introduce a little bit so you know what you're hearing. The heroine of Driven to Distraction is Constance Chen. She is the bookmobile manager. Mm-hmm. She is... no nonsense. Mm-hmm. She loves to swear. So she's, and she's very, she is confident. Mm-hmm. But she's also, to this point, sort of tried, is overwhelmed by the responsibilities in her life already. Mm-hmm. And so is trying not to form new ones. So sure. Any relationship she has, she wants short term. Basically booty calls to this point.
Hey.
And the bookmobile, by the way, her nickname for it is Big Bertha. Okay. So if that Big Bertha comes up, that's who Big Bertha is. The hero of the book is Sam. Mm-hmm. Sam is actually a pretty terrible person for her to end up attracted to for several reasons. The first is that he actually slept with her best friend. Previously in
right.
Mayday, Helen, the heroine of Mayday, actually sleeps with Sam, and her best friend is Constance. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of awkward,
right?
Even though there's nothing left there, it's still awkward. Mm-hmm. Also, he is the little brother of one of her other good friends, Penny, the heroine mm-hmm. of Broken Resolutions. And since Con is a love him and leave him sort, and she finds the guys get all mopey and too attached to her,
I mean, yeah.
She doesn't want to hurt one of her best friend's sure. younger brothers. So this is problematic. And they also work together. And that, mm-hmm. I mean, not, you know, he's the IT guy. He's an IT guy in the department, kind of lumberjacky mm-hmm. hotness. But, you know, he works in the library with her. And again, mm-hmm. if she's a love him and leave him sort, you don't want to focus on a guy who you're going to see
right.
all the time. So this is her, Constance, talking with Helen, her mm-hmm. best friend, about the reasons why she's horrified that she's now going to be spending a week in close proximity in the bookmobile, mm-hmm. which seats two people.
Right.
This is legit. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who is a former bookmobile manager. You know, there is room for two people in there, and it can be a tight squeeze. She's got to be with him for a week in mm-hmm. the bookmobile. So... okay. This is their conversation. So, Constance said, at some point I may have given you the impression I was interested in Sam, or as I prefer to call him, Sir Geeks-a-Lot. A small smile crossed Helen's face. Yeah, he seemed to make quite an impact on you when you met him during the May Day festivities. If I remember correctly, you asked me who he was. And then when I told you about his connections to Penny and me, you immediately made reference to the code of the sisterhood. Thou shalt not fuck... thy sister's brother or thy sister's sloppy seconds, Con right. finished for her, which kind of implied a certain amount of interest. Well, I was a stupid bitch, Con declared, and so are you for having slept with a know-it-all jerk who wouldn't know good customer service if it came up and punched him in the face. Con demonstrated a hard right hook. I'm not certain good customer service involves face punching. Helen waved a hand, but I'll overlook that for the moment. Apart from his status as Penny's brother and my ex-lover, what bothers you about him? So much. So much, Con said. I'll admit that he's hot. Stupendously hot. Even more so with that facial hair he's sporting now. I mean, how am I supposed to resist a hot ginger beardo? How could any straight woman not fantasize about offering herself to him like a particularly sturdy oak in need of felling? Helen blinked. I'm not sure how to answer that question. But he's always complaining about the bookmobile crew. Apparently we damage computers and electronic equipment at a much higher rate than other departments. And he blames me. Me, Con emphasized. According to him, I don't set a good example for my employees when it comes to organization and proper care of library resources. Can you believe it? Helen glanced around Con's office, her gaze falling on the tangled plants, the piles of paper, and the CPU Con frequently used as a footstool. I told him he could take his opinion and stick it where a surgeon would have to retrieve it using pliers, and that I would never directly ask him for help again, even if all my computers simultaneously exploded and he was the only IT guy on duty. Solid plan, Helen said. That's what I thought, Con crossed her arms. So as you can see, I have a vast assortment of reasons to avoid the scourge of the IT department, Sam Wolcott, even apart from your history with him. Which she had to admit was definitely a deterrent. Sleeping with her best friend's former one-night stand was just asking for awkwardness. And then there's his role in Penny's life, Helen added. Penny had just begun to build a real relationship with her half-brother. Con couldn't, wouldn't interfere with that. No matter how much she wanted to grasp a handful of his shaggy hair, yank him close, and... She took a deep breath. Back on topic, Chen. And the fact that I don't want a boyfriend, risking my relationship with my BFF and one of my other good friends for a quick fuck doesn't make sense. At all. You know how mopey some of my exes get. It's like they didn't hear me all the times I said I only wanted sex, nothing more. Eventually, the spark with Sam would fade, and she'd grow restless. Or he'd demand more than she was willing to give. And when that happened, his feelings might get hurt despite her best efforts. She didn't want to test Penny's loyalties or alienate a coworker. At least not more than she already had. Helen pursed her lips. I see. We can't get involved. So being stuck inside the Big Bertha with him for a week will be a nightmare hell. How am I supposed to stop myself from sleeping with him? I don't know. Let me just say, though, that if you should find yourself involved with Sam, despite all the, very convincing and extremely legitimate reasons you have for avoiding him, Helen ignored Khan's death stare, I certainly wouldn't object. If you talked with Penny, I'm sure she'd say the same. Don't deprive yourself for our sakes, lady. Weren't you listening to me? Khan pounded a fist on her desk. I'm not interested in Sam Wolcott at all, period. Even though sometimes I want to pin him to the stacks and climb him like a really sexy tree. Helen leaned across the desk and patted Khan's fist. Always a telltale sign of disinterest. Code of the Sisterhood, Khan reminded herself. Don't forget the code of the sisterhood. Hoes over bros. Just keep your distance from Sam over the next few days. Work on tamping down your libido. By next week, you'll be completely immune to his charms. Those delicious lumberjacky charms. She groaned again.
Thank you for reading that. You were kind enough to send me an advanced copy of this book, and I started it recently. And I'm pretty sure I was like highlighting a bunch of that. And I was like, I'm just going to bookmark this because like the pages were becoming too highlighted. The hot ginger beardo made me laugh. But it's great. I mean, it's like starting out and Constance seems like she's really, you know, she feels good about herself and strong. And, you know, there's no like shaminess to her wanting to have like these casual relationships. But I mentioned the question that I had for you, which I made a note to myself and I was like, I'm going to ask her about this, is the fact that he had sex with her best friend previously. And obviously it's a non-issue because Helen has her own relationship now, you know, but there's this thing like in romance that we're like supposed to forget that, or I don't know, I guess it seems like you just never see that either the hero or the heroine had like these previous relationships, and it's like taboo to kind of even talk about unless the previous spouse is like dead, then that seems like that it's really the only time. Or if the hero's like a man whore and they talk about like how he used to have all these, you know, women, but now he finds the one. You know, that kind of thing.
Usually if the heroine has had sex before, mm-hmm. It can't be good.
Right. Yes. Right. So as I've become a more aware reader, like I see these things. So I like it when some of these norms, if you will, are challenged. And like, well, yeah, of course, because if these characters are in their 30s, of course they've been with other people before. And sometimes in real life, I mean, and that's kind of what I like about my books, too. I like it when they're kind of like messy because real life is messy and love is messy. You know, even when it's good, it can be messy. And so I like it when I see that in books. And yeah, I think it is kind of messy that he previously had sex with her best friend. But if it was just like a one night thing,
And it's also very character based. If Constance were an insecure heroine, mm-hmm. who was sort of unsure of her own appeal, like it would be much more of a problem for her. Mm-hmm. But that's not, you know, she has her own issues, but that is not one of them. Mm-hmm. She's very matter of fact about sex, mm-hmm. which means that she's going to understand this was as much as it was her best friend, and it's not that she wants that to be thrown in her face all the time.
Right.
You know, it's not, she's not going to take it as emotionally hard because she's had emotionally disconnected sex before. And so it's not going to be a big thing. But those norms, I mean, I very deliberately, usually if I have flipped one of those, it's on purpose. Mayday, the fact that, you know, she meets the hero. Well, she already knew him, but the first scene sort of with the hero where, I mean, it's in the premise, so I'll just say, you know, she has a disastrous one night or 1 hour stand with him.
That's right.
And then they don't see each other for most of a year. And in the meantime, she sleeps with Sam.
Right. Okay.
And I mean, that's not shown on page, but I deliberately did that. And then somebody refers to it briefly, the sloppy seconds thing. And she says, she's like, you know, he wasn't the man for me, but I can tell you it wasn't sloppy.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to be clear, like, it had been good sex because there was nothing wrong with the fact that, you know, and I, so far, I actually am pleasantly surprised. I thought that some readers were going to be very upset about that, that the heroine had had sex with another man during the course of the book's plot and that it was good sex. But I think the fact that it was off page and, I mean, to be blunt, if you're reading my books are very overtly feminist. I mean, there's really no two ways about it. So if that's something that's going to sort of offend you, then you're probably not going to be enjoying my books anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I love finding books that are overtly feminist because I think that it's, you know, it just changes the way that we think. And when people are like, well, romance is whatever. No, it's not. Like, it's not that at all. It can be. But then there's other things that are happening here, too. But yeah, I love the female friendships, the circle of friends and all of that. And yes, I love it when those some of those norms are challenged.
And the fact that, you know, Helen in Mayday, she sleeps with the hero and that it's not good.
Right.
And that was also deliberate. And other authors have done it before, but I wanted to do it. And that it was not great. And that, and also it gave it sort of a nice, I think, you know, a nice thing to drag you into. If, well, if he feels like he has to make up for that in bed in the future, then that makes for an entertaining, some entertaining romps later in the book.
It does.
Since he wants to show he can do better.
Right.
But he just wasn't in the right frame of mind. And even people that... I mean, and people know this, and again, other authors have done this. This is not some sort of invention of mine. But even with people that you love, and at the time, she didn't know him well enough, and they neither one of them was in the right frame of mind to be having sex right then. But even with people you know and you love and you're in a committed relationship with, and who otherwise would show you a very good time, you can still have bad sex. You know, things happen.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean that... Even with, you know, your fated mate, sex can sometimes be not great.
Right.
And and so I that was something that I wanted to sort of play with in that book.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always a good one that I enjoy to read about. And because it does, it adds that level of challenge where he has to work a little harder to really earn a second chance at all of it and having sex with her. And I think that I was probably reading for like a good 3 or 4 years before I even knew that there were books out there that showed bad sex. And I was like, I need to find these.
Yeah.
And like Jenny Cruzy, one of hers, I was like, okay, let me go read that. And but I like it. I just like anything that really kind of challenges the norm. So.
And Helen is a virgin, and it's not, he can't tell by like his magical divining penis. Because the usually they're like, because a lot of women don't have a hymen, particularly if they're older, but even when they're younger.
Right.
And so a lot of times there is no way that a man is going to know, or a woman is going to know, that a woman is a virgin. So. There's no, you know, I wanted that, and the fact that it was a non-traumatic de-virginification.
Right.
She wasn't looking at it and saying, will it fit?
Right.
Like, or anything like that. You know, that this was sort of a, that it was a non-event. Which in some ways, I think, I wonder whether I am doing my sales a disservice, because there's some people, for some people, that's catnip, that mm-hmm. de-virginification and that whole scene, that is something they're mm-hmm. into, like that trope.
Right.
So by undercutting it, I mean, I enjoy that. I sometimes wonder whether readers might wish that I didn't.
No,
but
I mean, because it's like a thing that wasn't a thing, right? Like, it's just, but that, again, I think it speaks to kind of it being kind of like, kind of real. Like, you know, we don't always have to read these books where everything's like magical and like unicorns and like, you know, and it's a thing and she wonders, will it fit? And then it's just magic and now she's in love with him and, you know, everything explodes for her the first time. And it's like, wait a second, like, this isn't real. Of course, none of it's real, but still, like, right. You know, like, I mean, I think that's what I like to read, like these books that are, like I said, really challenging that and just making it different and making it feel like, you know, these could be people like that I work with, like women that I know that these things are going through and the struggles and things that they're doing. So,
and I can't say too much without spoiling some of the book, but Driven to Distraction, the final conflict between the two of them, that was, is resolved in a way that is typically not resolved in romance novels. And that was important to me, too.
Okay.
So, you know, in a way that was also important for me as a feminist, but also someone who loves happily ever afters mm-hmm. and wants both characters to be very happy in the end. And hopefully I pulled that off. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that happens. I'm not going to say more. I've talked about it on Twitter some, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to say more okay. then because it.
We'll see. Okay. So one thing that I also really enjoy about your books is there's diverse characters. So Constance is half Chinese.
She's Chinese American.
Okay. Chinese American. Okay. And I think Helen was plus size.
Yep. Wes is half Latino.
Okay.
And Mary, the heroine of the sixth book, is black.
Okay. Right. So that's and I think one of the things that I think I like a lot about it is it also is it is not a thing. They are just people who are diverse, as you know, like it doesn't always have to be like I have a black friend, I have a Chinese friend, you know, like it doesn't feel forced. It feels like these are just people that work at the library, that live in this city, and they are also half Latino, you know. I feel like kind of like in life, like I don't know.
You know, my intent was basically to reflect the people around mm-hmm. me. So if I had, you know, I deserve no cookies for this. When I looked to make my series, if I had made it all white mm-hmm. thin characters, it would have resembled nothing about my life.
Mm-hmm.
My, you know, my husband is Asian. Mm-hmm. You know, he was adopted from Asia by a Swedish family.
Okay.
So he is one of the rare Asian Swedes now living in the U.S. Uh-huh. And we adopted my daughter from Ethiopia.
Okay.
My CP, who is a gorgeous, whip smart Latina,
mm-hmm.
The life that I have formed, the people that I care about mm-hmm. are diverse
mm-hmm.
and because that's just the way my life is.
Sure.
And so to have created a series where it was, even in a small town where everyone was white and thin, made I was just like, I don't even see how I could, it would feel so weird. That mm-hmm. would be a deliberate choice on my part,
right,
to not reflect
mm-hmm.
the life around me. And how could I look at my daughter growing up and say, I write books, but none of the heroines look like you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never wanted to have that conversation with her.
Sure.
Even if my daughter were white, I mean, I would feel the same way. But especially, I wanted her to be able to see herself in all my heroines, hopefully, mm-hmm. not until she's over 18.
Right. Much, much, much older.
Right. Yeah. But I wanted to make sure, I mean, it would be, if everyone, like I said, if everyone in my series were white, mm-hmm. that would be unreality on mm-hmm. my part. And that would also be a deliberate choice on my part mm-hmm. not to reflect reality.
Sure. Right. And I get that. And, you know, and I see what you're saying. Like, you don't deserve cookies about it. But I think that as the reader, I would like to see more people, more authors incorporating like more real lives. I mean, I think that some people do live very insulated lives and they're only seeing one nationality, one race, you know, where everybody's straight, you know, whatever. But and that's OK. But I also like it when, you know, it really just reflects more of a realness to it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and something that has been a real joy to me the past several years as I've become more part of the romance community is reading more books, amazing, mm-hmm. wonderful books, you know, own voices, you know, mm-hmm. called. So, you know, authors who are writing their experience, mm-hmm. who are not typically, mm-hmm. you know, have not in the past been published as they should have been, or mm-hmm. not given the platform to publish as they should have been. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, my writing a Black heroine or a Chinese American heroine, I did my best, mm-hmm. but they'll do it better, because sure. if they are Chinese American, and there's aspects to it that, you know, is I'm going to try my damnedest mm-hmm. to like get it right and not to be hurtful, but
sure.
But you know, I want to make sure that me doing this does not replace books by authors of color and diverse authors sure. speaking to their own experience.
Right. And I agree wholeheartedly. And one of my, you know, resolutions or things I'm trying to work for as a reader is to be more conscientious and reading more authors that are, you know, women of color, you know, not straight white women, you know, representing that, just because, you know, I don't want to be so single-minded and think that, like, oh, this is the only thing that's out there. So I'm trying hard. But, you know, it also just brings a different perspective to a book. That's all, you know, to any type of book. And, you know, so.
You know, I think sometimes they can be somewhat harder to find because yes. they're not given the promotion or the mm-hmm. publishing platform. But the actual reading of it is, I mean, there are amazing authors out there. It's not, you know, not like a, you know, this is not what you were saying, but it's not somehow a chore. I mean, if
I read
Alicia Rye or, you know, Alyssa Cole or mm-hmm. all these other, Rebecca Weatherspoon, mm-hmm. just, of course, Sherry Thomas and all these authors are, Courtney Milan and others mm-hmm. are just amazing mm-hmm. authors.
Yes.
And, you know, and those are just a few. And I know that there are a ton more who just have not been given mm-hmm. the platform
right.
that they might have. They would have,
right?
If they had,
yeah,
if looked like me, right. They've been right. like random white chick,
right? Like. No, I get it too, and I don't mean to like say that it's like a chore. Some it can be harder to find.
Yes,
that can be the choriest part of it.
Oh yeah, because a lot of them have ended up self-publishing,
right?
Either, you know, through their own choice or mm-hmm. by the fact that they have not been given the sort of opportunities
right.
that other authors have, and then discoverability then becomes a little bit harder,
right? Yeah. But I think Rebecca Weatherspoon runs the like We Need Diverse Romance
and the Women Twitter. Of the Women and of WOC and right. Romance, Women of Color and Romance.
Right. So she tweets out a lot of stuff, so that's really great because yeah. I use Twitter mostly
yeah.
to find new books. But
yeah.
But yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it's just, I think part of it is being conscientious of it and, you know, trying to do better. So, so I have, let's see here. So also with being an author, like, let's see. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is I know that you don't read your reviews or Goodreads. You don't go on Goodreads.
I do not go on Goodreads.
I have so much respect for that because Goodreads is like the worst of the worst, I think.
You know, as someone who is, I am perfectionist. Mm-hmm. I also am prone to anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten it, you know, at least at the moment, you know, most of this past year, I felt much better. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I was not feeling better in December, January, February, that's when my books first came out. Mm. And I had not blocked Goodreads. And it was basically impossible for me not to read the reviews. Mm-hmm. And the problem with someone who is like me mm-hmm. is that the good reviews, they don't stick. Mm-hmm. You don't believe them. They say, well, they're my friends, or they must not be very picky, or whatever. And the bad reads are bad reviews are seared into every synapse in your brain. And I was paralyzed and I felt embarrassed, and I felt it was bad. I mean, it was bad for my mental health, and it was bad for my writing, because then I was self-conscious coming in and questioning whether I should be doing it. And so I had my husband block Goodreads on my computer, and then I was cheating and checking on my laptop. So I had blocked Goodreads on my laptop. So now if I want to get to Goodreads, I have to go up to his computer, which is upstairs. So, like, that's not happening. So during the day, unless I need a link for something. And it's been better. I mean, I still see the Amazon ones and so forth, but... It was paralyzing to me, and it's not for me. I mean, in the end, they're for each other. They're for the other people who are contemplating reading my books. And, you know, for my mental health, I need to disengage, but also, again, just realize that I am not the intended audience for this. So, you know, I mean, in some ways it's a shame, because, you know, if you get the same people saying the same things repeatedly, you can kind of pinpoint, well, that is an issue, rather than just one person's, you know, very personal response. This is an overall issue with the plot or the characterization. So in some ways, it's unfortunate, because I may miss some of that, although I'm reading the Amazon reviews, so I may catch it anyway. But yeah, I just couldn't. I mean, otherwise I couldn't keep writing. And also, I didn't want to be depressed again.
Sure. No, and I mostly think about it in relation to you, because I know we've had this conversation before about Goodreads. And Goodreads for me is just so hard to use. I don't understand why their interface is just so hard for me. I'm pretty tech savvy. But anyway, that's a different story. But I really appreciate it how you are very honest about Goodreads and, like, your what it does for your mental health. And, you know, kind of a dovetail off of that is, like, as being part of the romance community, even the tiny little bit that I am, I have never found a group of women that are so honest about their struggles, and that so many of us struggle with those things of depression and anxiety, and that, you know, and it just feels very open, and it feels great to be a part of that, you know? So I love it, like, from your personal perspective, when you're open about that.
You know, reading other people's experiences on Twitter or, or wherever have helped me become, over the past couple of years, much more open, even in my own life. You know, my personal Facebook account, you know, a year or so ago, I said, okay, if you're wondering what's going on with me, here's what's been happening. You know, because I would disappear for a while, and, you know, a lot of that was just, I was struggling, you know, and there are a lot of folks struggling, and if no one says it, then how are people to know that it's normal, and to know about that it's possible to sort of keep going? I mean, I was lucky enough not to have sort of major, you know, I've never been suicidal. But I have spent, you know, a month basically feeling like a failure, you know, crying all the time. And that's, it's important that if that's happening to someone else, that they know that you know, that there is life after that. And also put a name to what's happening, and then know what can be done to fix it.
And I think that's part of it. The more we talk about it, the less we, you know, it becomes more destigmatized, Like, it's okay to be like, like, I was telling somebody yesterday, in fact, about my podcast, that one of the reasons why I stopped subscribing to podcasts on iTunes is because, like, each time it would tell me that I had a podcast, like, not even my own, just other podcasts that I listened to, like, if I didn't go onto it for a couple days, I'd come back and there'd be, like, six new episodes. And I felt, like, overwhelmed by it, that, like, I know this sounds like silly. They laughed at me. I don't care. But it felt paralyzing to subscribe to something and then miss a couple days and then be like, oh my God, there's six episodes. I can't do anything else until I listen to these. Like, you know, and just whatever it is, the thing that makes you feel like that, you're like, why? I can't do that anymore. But again, that's being able to say, like, yeah, these things, like, I feel like that, you feel like that, but I'm okay-ish most days.
I'm okay-ish. Yes.
You know, so, but that's the thing, like, to be able, and I feel like I'm more able to talk about it because I've met other people that are talking about it.
Right.
So.
I mean, even things that are, you know, again, this is the blessing of a lot of our community is that I say this, I adore my daughter. Mm-hmm. I love her with every cell in my body. Mm-hmm. Having a child was really hard on my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've talked about with other romance authors. And it's not something, because motherhood is supposed mm-hmm. to be
effortless, I get it, right?
And natural.
It just happens and we're all Donna Reed or
right.
whatever.
I mean, that it could be something that is, you know, an ongoing challenge to my ability to sort of stay mentally
mm-hmm.
healthy. That can coexist alongside my devoted love for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and that's something that is not something you hear all the time. And again, it's important.
It is important. It's very important. So one of the things I've been asking pretty much everybody that comes on okay. my episode is, so have you experienced a moment because you're a romance reader, a romance writer, like any sort of shame from outside sources about that, like where they try to like downplay it or kind of like, like you read that kind of thing?
Not specifically about my books.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, when I started writing it, just when I was about to quit the library, and I'd already gotten a contract, and I was writing, one of my friends, who was a colleague there, who is, he doesn't read genre fiction in general, mm-hmm. but, like, he was sort of saying, and he's a very good man, I mean, a very good mm-hmm. man, but he was saying things about, I think it was about Nora Roberts' books, basically mm-hmm. that, you know, how ridiculous it was that they were the same. And like this, it hurt my feelings
mm-hmm.
because I was like, you know, I'm quitting to do this for a living. Like mm-hmm. why, you know, and that hurt me. And it's mm-hmm. that occurred. But, you know, I did have, this is one of my husband's coworkers, had a very odd idea of what romances were like,
mm-hmm.
where he said, actually, I thought this was hilarious, where we were talking one day and I mentioned, he said something about, well, I'm sure that, you know, your heroines are all in their 20s. And I was like, no, my heroines for the most part are in their, like, in their 30s somewhere, mm-hmm. either low to, mm-hmm. you know, even upper 30s. And he's like, but who would want to read that? Don't people want to read like a 20... Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 21-year-old heroine, like a 35-year-old guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe guys do. And I'm sure some female readers
right,
do, too.
Right.
Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it was such a male view of like, well, of course you want to have this young, nubile, mm-hmm. like trophy heroine with this older, powerful man. And I'm like, no.
No.
I'm right. like, or if they do want that, they're clearly not picking up my books.
Right.
Because, but so, I mean, I've had a few things. Like that, where it's just misconceptions mm-hmm. about what the genre entails, but
mm-hmm.
but as a whole, no. But you know, I'm also a homebody. Most of my human interaction does come via the internet,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot of I do have a bit of a bubble of mm-hmm. of romance readers, and also, I mean, I don't invite that sort of commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like I consider myself a nice person, but I think part of it is I don't apologize for it either,
mm-hmm.
and I'm proud of it, and I'm not going to like
right.
sort of cringe away and sort of say, oh, I'm a romance writer, and mm-hmm. sort of, I mean, I think that I think I come across as confident enough in it that mm-hmm. like I don't, maybe that deflects some of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I'm sure if I met more people on a daily basis that would not work, but I think maybe I'm intimidating enough. Very intimidating.
Yeah.
intimidating. I'm like 5'2" and like very round.
I was gonna say you're about as intimidating as I'm intimidating.
So maybe they're just too scared to say
right.
anything.
That's probably. I'm sure that's what
too
it is.
Frightened.
Yes. No. I mean, I just think it's very interesting because, I mean, as part being you know, even 5 years ago when I was reading, like, I wouldn't tell anybody what I was reading. Mm-hmm. You know, but now I'm like so unapologetic about it. Like, this is what I enjoy. I have met friends. I have met people. It's fun. And so I'm like, I'm not apologizing anymore, no. You know? And so I like to have fun with it. So other than the two books that you have coming out this year, what else do you have coming up in 2017? Are you going to be at any conferences? Are you going to like RT, anything?
I have been to RWA the last several years, but I think I'm going to skip this year, in part because I'm probably going to dabble a little bit with self-publishing.
Okay.
So I want to take the money that I would put toward the conference.
Mm-hmm.
I can buy the recordings because there's a lot of great information, and I really will miss my friends.
Sure.
And I'm sad about that, but that money I'm going to put toward getting like an editor,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting a proofreader, you know, uh-huh. getting a cover, mm-hmm. you know, like a good cover.
Right.
Not like MS Paint. Like something. So I think that's sort of where my time is going to be spent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I have finished the writing for my contract,
mm-hmm.
As it turns out, like I really need different sorts of stories.
Okay.
So I'm sort of, for the moment, I will come back to the contemporary romantic comedy,
mm-hmm.
but right now I'm writing a futuristic gothic.
Okay.
Which is completely, it's a different voice. I'm going to have a different, my mm-hmm. pen name for that's going to be Olivia Dart. I've already written one futuristic under mm-hmm. that name. I haven't published yet. I'm trying to get several books together before I
sure.
do. So I'm just going to have fun, but I've got this idea for like a series of novellas inspired by like HGTV shows.
Okay. Tiny House Hunters.
I was going to do one where a woman is on like one of those shows
uh-huh.
and she's hunting for a tiny house, and her BFF since forever realizes like she wants to move cross country, that he's got to make his move now.
Oh.
And so he tries to sabotage her tiny house hunting. Like, as she goes through and sort of, you know, go through that, because I find those deeply entertaining, particularly the couples who are like, I want a king size bed
mm-hmm.
and room for my kayak,
right,
and a full size kitchen uh-huh. and like a
and we have soaker four bathtub kids.
And we right. have four kids and three dogs, and it needs to be under 200 square feet,
right,
and I would like to spend no more than $13,000,
right.
And I was just like, good luck with that.
Right. I'm like, are these people on crack? Like, okay.
One of my friends said, I was talking to her on the phone, she's like, you know, there are vehicles actually set up for this, for being on the road. They're called RVs.
Right.
Like, but it's for people who, I mean, I think there are people who, you know, if you don't want to be on the road,
right.
then that's fine. And for people who do want to be on the road, but maybe feel like they want something more personalized, mm-hmm. maybe than
yeah.
RV, I don't know.
Yeah, but that sounds interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I have, you know, I still want to come back to some Colony Williamsburg
mm-hmm.
books.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea for a couple of those. I have an idea for a couple of those. So it may be where I finally... I've never written a billionaire.
Oh.
But I kind of want to do, I have an idea for a book called Billionaire in Breeches. That he'd be like undercover checking out to see whether he wants to donate money to Colony Williamsburg.
Oh, okay.
And like sort of goes in, like goes mm-hmm. full on breeches, and like secretly at home has like a butler and everything, but like shows up to Colony Williamsburg every day and it's Dreycorn ad.
Yeah.
And like so forth. And that's how I would do billionaires, because I'm not very good.
Yeah. Well, I'm always like, if I never read another billionaire book, and then they just come to me sometimes, I'm like, I have to read this.
Well,
I say that, but it's more there's a specific type of trope with the billionaire that I'm not a fan of, like the 35 powerful one who meets the nubile 21-year-old. I can't read those ones. But other ones, you know, sometimes these men have money and I'm just drawn to read them. So
I don't read as many books with young heroines.
Yeah.
As a whole. I mean, and there are some excellent books out there. Mm-hmm. It's just not my particular mm-hmm. catnip.
Right. And I feel the same way. I'm also trying to make a conscientious effort to like read blurbs better. So because I think there are like some keywords or phrases sometimes that you know, it might not automatically tell you how old they are, but will give me a better idea. Like, mm-hmm. I would prefer not to read any heroines that are under the age of 28 anymore. But some, I say that, and then someone's going to write an NA book that I'm just going to adore and be like, right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know there are some excellent authors about mm-hmm. out there. I would say a lot of the new adult books, a lot of them are very angst heavy. Mm-hmm. And I just, if it's going to be angsty, it's seldom that like I'm super,
yeah,
super into just purely emotional drama because they're young and don't know themselves. And that's very potent for mm-hmm. a lot of people. Like that's a pleasurable read for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. For me, my mom said I was 15 going on 50.
Yes.
So like it's hard for me to relate to that mm-hmm. because I had my own issues, but that was not that right. sort of struggle was not necessarily mine.
Yes.
So it's, I have a hard time relating to that.
I also have a hard time relating to it. And I again, just there's a handful of authors that I'm like, I'll read it because I've gotten to a point where I know it's not going to be too angsty. But then, like, one of the gals that was on here, she recommended a book to me that's NA. And I listened to it. I'm trying to do more audiobooks. And it was it was very angsty and a lot of, like, back and forth. And I'm just, I appreciate that she really likes that. And I gave it a try. And it's not for me.
Yeah.
So, but that I think also that's the one great thing about romance is there's just so much out there, and whatever it is that you like,
you can find it. And the flip part of that is as a neurotic author that mm-hmm. I have to remind myself of is that means that there are going to be people who don't like what you do, even if you did the best possible iteration mm-hmm. of what you do. There are going to be some people who don't like it because they just don't like whatever it is.
Right.
Your base voice, your base sort of plots you write, or whatever your mm-hmm. your thing is.
Right.
There are going to be, if you're looking for angsty
alphas, yeah,
you're going to read my book and be like, if you like sort of, you know, very sweet in the sense of like innocent, mm-hmm. non-body, you're not going to like my books. And you just have to, which is hard because some of my covers look quite sweet.
Your covers, I think like
particularly the bike book.
Was that Mayday?
Well, Mayday, but it was Ready to Fall, like has a couple yes. on bikes. And like my books are not erotic romance, but they're steamy.
Yes.
And I swear a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I, because, you know, I do reviews sometimes for Smexy Books. And so she sent just yesterday, like, a list of books. And one that I looked at, it was like, the blurb sounds kind of interesting, but the cover has a lot of pink on it that makes me feel like it's going to be sweeter and possibly closed door. So I'm not sure about that because, you know, and then somebody else was saying, I never look at covers. And I'm like, I always look at covers because I think that they're a huge indicator of what's going to be in that book because of things like, does it look pinky and flowery? And I'm probably going to get like a sweet, clean romance. Maybe a few curse words. Who knows? But
and in the end, covers that are even inadvertently misleading mm-hmm. are not good for authors because that means you'll end up getting some readers who are reading and thinking they're getting something different than what they get. Mm-hmm. So I've had a few reviews that said there was too much obscenity for them. Mm. And I think, you know, that may be because they thought it was going mm-hmm. to be.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I could see that. Yeah. From your covers.
They're great covers.
No. They are great. Yeah, but they're not like the hard bodied man all tattooed up. Right. Like.
And there's also, you know, I think there's an expectation that small town romance will also be sweeter mm-hmm. In some cases. And mine are mm-hmm. not. They're body small town romances.
Right.
So, I mean, I wouldn't know how to write living in New York City or LA. I mean, mm-hmm. I never have lived in a place like right. that. So again, writing sort of the experience I have, but just filthier.
Just filthier.
I have funny. Had librarians be like, that would never happen in a library. I'm like, I know. I worked in a library, but that's
the fun of it.
The universe I created has a farcical element mm-hmm. to it. I mean, and that was deliberate, that it's reality, but it's not
right.
I can make a community where, like, people are okay with having, like, an erotic book
room. Right. I mean, like, I'd love to go in, like, Siebert Arts Library and see, like, an erotica display. I'd be like, I'm living in an alternate universe right now. Something's happening.
I mean, and how could I write a book with a bookmobile where they don't have sex in the bookmobile?
I mean,
how that there's no payoff then.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to have a bookmobile, I talked to my friend who, you know, who is the manager. And bless her heart, I want to emphasize, like, I love you, Becky. And I want to emphasize that Becky wants to make very clear that she never had sex in a bookmobile. But I will say, to Becky's credit, and she's a romance lover too, she loves pirates.
Oh.
Is that... when I talked to, we're sitting at Panera, right? And I'm like, so, Becky, like, let's just say, if you were to have sex on board the bookmobile, where do you think? She didn't even, I mean, she really, there was no flinch. She just thought for a moment. She's like, well.
That's awesome. See, those are good kind of friends.
And she enumerated the possibilities. So, yeah, bless her heart. This is not from personal experience. And again, it's not, when they have sex in the library, it's not from personal experience either. I mean, I didn't do that. But again, you create a fictional world. You can make things a little different.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, it's an escape. It's like, even though I like some realism in it, it's still an escape. And I like to read about these, you know, characters that are going to have sex on a bookmobile and curse, because, like, who doesn't do that? No, some people do, but don't. I don't understand those people, but again, I think that's really the best thing about, like, romance. And I tell my coworkers here, I'm like, if I could find out a little bit more about you, like, as a person, like, I guarantee you I can find a romance for you. Right. Like, you might not like it, but whatever. I mean, at least if you give it a shot.
I said on Twitter the other day, my husband has read all of my books because he's wonderful and he's supportive. And he's like, well, I've thanked him for it. He's like, why are you thanking me? Of course I'm going to read them. Mm-hmm. And he, because he's a good husband, and he really enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
So now he sort of wants to try a few others to sort of compare and sort of see how they, you know, because I think it's lighter reading for him. He usually reads about chess.
Like, I mean,
stuff like that. So I think it's lighter reading. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I did tell him that, and I also said this on Twitter, that, like, no matter what he thinks, he's always going to have to say that my books are the best.
Oh, duh.
And he's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. I'm like, no, really. He's like, okay, okay.
Does he not understand how the marriage works? Like,
like, I said, I don't care what you really think, but you're going to tell me that mine are the best.
When I know that you say lighter reading in relation to reading books about chess or whatever, but I honestly can say that there are many romance books that I still have to use the little dictionary on Kindle for, because I'm like, I don't know this word, like, and I've learned new words. I may have looked up a couple words in your books, but that's good. That's good for me, like, as a reader, to be challenged. And again, it kind of just challenges the whole stereotype of what other people think is happening in romance books.
If Kindle keeps track, they probably do, of all the words you look up.
Oh.
Occasionally, I'll let my finger linger too long, and I'll, like, highlight was or he. They're gonna be like, what is wrong with her?
Maybe I need to try that tactic.
Random, and then, like, you know, obediently the definition comes up. I'm like, thank you, Kindle. Now I know what was means.
Thank you for telling me the definition for four.
Yeah. It'll be like really hard words, and then it'll be like it.
That's a new tactic. But okay. So anyway, but that about wraps it up. But thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me. I had so much fun. And I love following you on Twitter. That's how we became friends, as is my MO. I find people and I, like, feel like I wear them down until they want to be my friends.
You did not have to wear me down. You're delightful. But yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Olivia Writes. So OliviaWrites.
Okay.
I'm sporadically on Facebook. Twitter is more my natural home, but and yeah, I have a website, oliviadade.com, and yeah, look me up. And my book's coming out on the 17th, and I it's my favorite in the series.
Is it?
it legitimately is. I love all of them, mm-hmm. but like this one, I think it's swoony. It's in a way that maybe I don't always achieve quite as much. It's swoony, and I love both the hero and heroine. I like the conflict a mm-hmm. lot, and I think it's really funny. So I hope people love it.
Okay, I hope so too.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I just directed you to somebody the other day in my direct message Twitter. So
yay! Yes.
She was like, she's in my TBR, and then we dovetailed into the whole conversation about TBRs, but you know.
I have so many books. I mean, I am not, I read less actually mm-hmm. now that I'm writing mm-hmm. because while I'm writing, I can't read other authors because right. I'm afraid of cross-pollinating stories and,
sure.
and voices and so forth. So my TBR list is actually much bigger than it was before I was an author because mm-hmm. I still read, but I can only read between books.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah.
The reader struggle is real.
It is.
It's very real.
I'm a reader before I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. So it's...
Yeah. Okay. All right. And I'll make sure to link to your Twitter and your website.
Okay.
Okay. And so, again, thank you so much for coming in. All right.
Bye.
Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen, Chris Sands, and me. Join me next week when I have romantic suspense author Emily Duvall.